the trial of Leto Atreides had ended by fiat, and the only ones openly dissatisfied with the verdict were the Bene Tlaelacs. He and Shaddam would work to quiet them quickly, though. The greatest mystery in Fenring's mind was that no one seemed to know exactly what had happened inside the Guild Highliner. The more he observed and the more he considered the strange sequence of events, the more he began to believe the possibility that young Leto Atreides had been framed after all. But how and by whom? No other house had come forward to gloat, and since virtually everyone had believed in Atreides' culpability, even the most imaginative and loose tongues had not bothered to spread additional rumors. Fenring would dearly love to know what had happened, if only to add the technique to his own repertoire. But once he went off to his new assignment on Arrakis, he doubted he would have any opportunity to unravel the secret. Before he could advance his pleasant conversation with Margot, though, he heard thunderous crowds outside and resonating trumpets.
"Shaddam and the royal entourage are coming," Margot said with a toss of her honey-blonde hair. "We'd best go find our seats."
Fenring knew the Crown Prince's carriage would now be entering the quadrangle containing the theater and imperial government buildings. He tried to cover his disappointment.
"But you'll be in the Bene Gesserit section, my dear."
He stared at her with glittering dark eyes as he dipped a piece of pheasant chitain into a bowl of plum sauce.
"Would you like me to dress in one of those costumes and pretend to be in the sisterhood?"
He swallowed the morsel, savored its sweetness.
"I'd do it to be next to you,
She tapped him on the chest, playfully.
"You aren't what you appear to be, that's for certain, Hasimir Fenring."
His overlarge eyes narrowed.
"Meaning?"
"Meaning, we have much in common, you and I."
She pressed one of her soft breasts against his arm.
"Perhaps it would be wise for the two of us to continue and formalize this alliance we seem to be forming."
Fenring glanced around to see if anyone was eavesdropping. He didn't like snoopers. Leaning close to her, he spoke in a passionless voice.
"I never intended to take a wife. I am a genetic eunuch and cannot father children."
"Then we may be required to make certain sacrifices, each in our own ways. That need be nothing personal."
She arched her golden eyebrows.
"Besides, I imagine you have your ways of pleasing a woman. I, too, have had extensive training."
A cruel smile slashed his face.
Is that so? My dear Margot, it sounds as if you're presenting me with a business plan."
"And you, Hasimir, seem to be a man who prefers practicality over romanticism."
"I think we're well matched," she said. "Both of us are skilled at recognizing layered plans, the labyrinthine ways in which seemingly unrelated actions are actually connected."
"The results are often quite deadly, aren't they?" She reached over with her napkin to wipe plum sauce from the side of his mouth.
You need someone to take care of you."
He studied her, the finishing school way she held her chin high, the perfection and steady tempo of her speech, such a contrast to his occasional slurs and verbal hesitations. Her gray-green eyes gazed at him without apparent concealment. But he could see the sparkle of secrets held behind those lovely pupils. So many secrets. And he could spend years and years reveling in the challenge of uncovering them. Fenring reminded himself how clever these witches were. They did not take individual action. Nothing was as it seemed.
"You and your sisterhood have a larger purpose in mind, Margot, my dear. I know something of the ways of the Bene Gesserit. You are a group organism."
"Well, I've informed the organism of what I wish to do."
"Inform them or ask them? Or did they send you after me in the first place?"
The dame of House Vanette strolled by, leading a brace of small coiffed dogs. Her gilded dress was so voluminous that other guests had to back out of her way. With each step, the noble woman fixed her blank gaze forward, as if just concentrating on keeping her balance. Margaret watched the spectacle, then turned back to Fenring.
There are obvious advantages to all of us, and Mother Superior Harishka has already given me her blessing. You would gain a valuable connection with the sisterhood, though I wouldn't necessarily tell you all of our secrets.
She nudged him playfully, nearly causing him to spill his plate of food.
He said, looking over the perfection of her figure. And I am a key to the power of Shaddam. He trusts no one more than me.
Bemused, Margaret raised her eyebrows.
Oh, is that why he sent you away to Arrakis? Because you are so close to him? I'm told that you aren't happy with the new duty.
How did you find out about that? Fenring scowled, felt the uncomfortable sensation of losing his balance. I just learned of the assignment myself 2 days ago.
This clever witch had more to say, and he waited for her.
Hasimir Fenring, you must learn to use every circumstance to your advantage. Arrakis is the key to Melange, and the spice opens the universe. Our new emperor may think he has merely reassigned you, but in reality, he has entrusted you with something vitally important. Think of it. Imperial Observer on Arrakis.
Yes, and the Baron Harkonnen won't like it one bit. I suspect he's been hiding many small details all along.
She graced him with a lush, full smile.
No one can hide such things from you, my dear. Or me.
He smiled back at her.
Then we can while away the miserable days ferreting out his secrets.
She ran her long, thin fingers along his sleeve.
Arrakis is a most difficult place in which to live, but perhaps you would enjoy it more in my company.
He grew wary, as was his nature. Though the crowd was filled with extravagant costumes and exotic plumage, Margaret was the most beautiful woman in the entire hall.
I might.
But why would you want to go there? A horrible place, by all accounts.
My sisters describe it as a planet of ancient mysteries, and my spending time there would greatly increase my standing among the Bene Gesserit. It could be an important step in my training to become a reverend mother. Use your imagination. Sandworms, Freeman, spice. It could be most interesting if you and I were to solve those mysteries together. I'm stimulated by your companionship, Hasimir.
I'll give your proposal some thought.
He was drawn to this woman, physically and emotionally. Bothersome feelings. When he had experienced such strong emotions in the past, he had felt compelled to dismiss the attraction, get rid of it in any manner necessary. This sister, Margaret Rashinozia, was different, though, or seemed to be. Only time would tell. He'd heard stories of Bene Gesserit breeding programs, but because of his congenital deformity, the sisterhood would not be after his genetic line. There had to be something else to it. Obviously, Margaret's motives went beyond her personal feelings, if she truly had any feelings for him. This woman had to see the opportunities in him, both for herself and for her order of sisters. And Margaret offered him something as well, a new avenue to power he'd never dreamed existed. Until now, his only advantage had rested with Shaddam, his fortuitous childhood companion. But that status had been recently damaged when the Crown Prince began behaving strangely. Shaddam had stepped beyond his abilities, attempting to make his own decisions and think for himself. A dangerous, foolhardy course of action.
and he didn't even seem to know it yet. Given the circumstances, Fenring needed new contacts in powerful places, such as the Bene Gesserit. With the arrival of the imperial carriage outside, guests began streaming into the Grand Theater. Fenring discarded his plate on a side table, and Margot slipped her arm through his, saying, "You'll sit with me then?" "Yes," he said with a wink, "and maybe a little more than that." She smiled prettily, and he thought of how difficult it would be to kill this woman, if it ever came to that. Each house major had received 12 tickets to the double event in the Grand Theater, while the rest of the population in the Imperium watched over planetary relays. Everyone would talk about the details of the magnificent ceremony for at least the next decade, exactly as Shaddam intended. As the representative of his restored house, Duke Leto Atreides sat with his entourage in black plaid seats in the second row, main level. The Emperor's beloved cousin had maintained pretenses since the ending of the Lanzrad trial, but Leto did not believe the feigned friendship would last beyond his return to Caladan. Unless, of course, Shaddam intended to collect on the favor. "Beware of what you buy," the old Duke had said, "for there may be hidden costs." Thufir Hawat sat on Leto's right, and a proud and effusive Romber Vernius on his left. On the other side of Romber sat his sister Kylia, who had joined the delegation after Leto was freed. She had rushed to Kytane to see the coronation and to stand beside her brother. Her emerald eyes dazzled with every fresh sight. Not a moment went by without Kylia gasping or exclaiming in delight at some new marvel. Leto's heart warmed to see such utter joy in her, the first he'd noticed since their flight from Ix. While Romber wore Vernius purple and copper, Kylia chose to drape her creamy shoulders with an Atreides cloak sporting red hawk armorial crests, like Leto's. Clutching his forearm and letting him escort her to their seats, Kylia told him with a soft smile, "I chose these colors out of respect for the host who granted us sanctuary, and to commemorate the restored fortunes of House Atreides." She kissed him on the cheek. Since the matter of the death sentence on House Vernia still hung like a thick cloud on the horizon, the siblings attended the festivities at considerable personal risk. In the present atmosphere of celebration, however, Thufir Hawat surmised that they were probably safe, provided they didn't overstay their welcome. When Leto first heard this, he laughed. "Thufir, do Mentats ever provide guarantees?" Hawat did not find this amusing. Though the coronation and imperial wedding were among the safest places in the universe because of the intense public attention, Leto doubted that Dominic Vernius would show his face. Even now, after vindictive Elrood's death, Romber's father had not ventured out of hiding, had not sent them any sort of message whatsoever. Across the rear of the cavernous theater, on both the main and upper levels, sat representatives of Houses Minor and various factions among Choam, the Spacing Guild, the Mentats, the Sook Doctors, and other power bases scattered across the million worlds. House Harkonnen had their own segregated section in an upper balcony. The Baron, attending without his nephew Rabban, refused even to glance in the direction of the Atreides seats.
"The colors, the sounds, the perfumes, it's making me dizzy," Kylia said, drawing a deep breath and leaning closer to Leto. "I've never seen anything like this, on Ix or on Caladan." Leto said, "No one in the Imperium has seen anything like this in almost 140 years.
In the first row, directly in front of the Atreides, sat a contingent of Bene Gesserit women in identical black robes, including withered Mother Superior Harishka. On the other side of the aisle from the quiet and manipulative women stood fully armed Sardaukar in ceremonial uniforms. The Bene Gesserit delegation greeted fresh-faced Reverend Mother Anirul, the Empress-to-be,
as she passed the group, accompanied by a large honor guard and garishly dressed ladies-in-waiting. Romber searched for the stunning blonde woman who'd given him the mysterious message cube, and found her sitting with Hasimir Fenring instead of with the other sisters. An air of expectation filled the high-ceilinged, tiered facility. Finally, a hush fell over the grand theater, and everyone stood respectfully, holding their hats and caps. Crown Prince Shaddam, attired in a formal Sardaukar commander's uniform with silver epaulets and the golden lion crest of House Carino, marched down the aisle on a carpet of velvet and damask. His red hair was pomaded with glitter. Members of his royal court followed him, all of them wearing scarlet and gold. Bringing up the rear was the green-robed High Priest of Dur, who had, by tradition, crowned every emperor since the fall of the thinking machines. Despite the varying fortunes of his ancient religion, the High Priest proudly sprinkled the iron-red holy dust of Dur right and left onto the audience. Seeing Shaddam's stately pace and how smartly uniformed he was, Leto recalled when the Crown Prince had marched up another aisle only days earlier to testify on his behalf. In a way, it seemed to him that his royal cousin had looked even more regal then, swathed in the fine silks and jewels of an emperor. Now he looked more like a soldier, the commander-in-chief of all imperial forces. "An obvious political move," Hawat said, leaning over to mutter in his ear. "Do you notice? Shaddam is letting the Sardaukar know that their new emperor considers himself a member of their organization, that they are important to his reign." Leto nodded, understanding this practice well. Like his father before him, the young duke fraternized with his men, dining with them and joining them in everyday functions to show that he would never ask his troops to do what he wouldn't do himself. "Looks to me like more show than substance," Romber said. "In ruling a vast empire, there's a place for show," Kylia said. With a pang, Leto recalled the old duke's penchant for bullfights and other spectacles. Shaddam reveled in the grandeur, bathed himself in glory. He bowed as he strutted past his future wife and the Bene Gesserit contingent. His coronation would come first. At the designated place, Shaddam came to a stop and turned to face the High Priest of Dur, who now held the glittering imperial crown on a gilded pillow. Behind the crown prince, a wide curtain opened to reveal the royal dais, which had been moved here. The massive imperial throne, empty now, had been carved from a single piece of blue-green quartz, the largest such gem ever found, dating back to the days of Emperor Hasik III. Hidden projectors shot fine-tuned lasers into the depths of the block of crystal, refracting a nova of rainbows. The audience gasped at the translucent beauty of the throne. "Indeed, there is a place for ceremony in the daily workings of the Imperium," Leto thought. "It has a unifying influence, making people feel they belong to something significant." Such ceremonies cemented the impression that humanity, not chaos, reigned over the universe. Even a self-serving emperor like Shaddam could do some good, Leto felt, and fervently hoped. Solemnly, the crown prince climbed the steps of the royal dais and seated himself on the throne, staring fixedly ahead. Following time-honored procedure, the high priest moved behind him and raised the jeweled crown high in the air. "Do you, Crown Prince Shaddam Raphael Corino IV, swear fidelity to the Holy Empire?" The priest's voice carried throughout the theater, over speakers of such high quality that everyone in the audience heard completely natural, undistorted sounds. The same words were transmitted around the planet of Kaitane, and would be spread throughout the Imperium. "I do," Shaddam said, his voice booming. The high priest lowered the symbol of office onto the seated man's brow, and to the gathered dignitaries he said,
I give you the new Padishah Emperor Shaddam IV. May his reign shine as long as the stars. May his reign shine as long as the stars, the audience intoned in a thunderous response. When Shaddam rose from the throne with the glittering crown on his head, he did so as Emperor of the Known Universe. Thousands inside the chamber applauded and cheered him. He looked across the audience that was a microcosm of everything he ruled, and his gaze came to rest on doe-eyed Anirul, who had moved to stand just below the dais with her honor guard and ladies-in-waiting. The emperor extended a hand, beckoning her. Harishka, mother superior of the Bene Gesserit, guided Anirul to Shaddam's side. The magnificent women moved with the faultless glide walk of the sisterhood, as if Shaddam were a magnet drawing them into his presence. Then ancient Harishka returned to her seat with the other Bene Gesserit. The priest said words over the couple, while the new emperor slipped two diamond rings onto the marriage finger of Anirul's hand, followed by a breathtaking red soustone band that had belonged to his paternal grandmother. When they were pronounced emperor and lady, the high priest of Dur presented them to the assemblage. In the audience, Hasimir Fenring leaned over and whispered to Margot, "Shall we step forward and see if the high priest can squeeze in another quick ceremony?" She giggled, nudged him playfully. That evening, hedonism in the capital city reached a fever pitch of adrenaline, pheromones, and music. The royal couple attended a sumptuous dinner banquet, followed by a grand ball, and then by a magnificent culinary orgy that made the earlier meal appear to have been no more than an appetizer. As the newlyweds departed for the imperial palace, they were showered with myrrh-silk roses and chased by the nobles. Finally, Emperor Shaddam IV and Lady Anirul retired to their marriage bed. Outside their room, drunken noblemen and ladies rang crystal bells and floated bright glow-globes at the windows, the traditional chivalry that would bring blessings of fertility upon the union. These festivities continued much as they had for millennia, going back to pre-Butlerian days, to the very roots of the Imperium. More than 1,000 expensive gifts were arrayed on the lawn of the palace. These offerings would be gathered by imperial servants and distributed later to the populace, in conjunction with an additional week of festivities on Kytane. After all the celebrations were complete, Shaddam would finally be able to get down to the business of ruling his empire of 1,000,000 worlds. In the final analysis, the legendary event called Leto's Gambit became the basis of the young Duke Atreides' immense popularity. He successfully projected himself as a shining beacon of honor in a galactic sea of darkness. To many members of the Landsraad, Leto's honesty and naivete became a symbol of honor that shamed many of the great and minor houses to alter their behavior toward each other, for a short time at least, until familiar old patterns reemerged. Origins of House Atreides, Seeds of the Future in the Galactic Imperium, by Bronzo of Ix. Furious that his plot had failed, Baron Harkonnen raged up and down the halls of his family keep on Gedi Prime. He screamed demands that his personal staff find a dwarf for him to torture. He needed a creature to dominate, something he could crush entirely. When Yehim, one of the Baron's entertainment monitors, complained that it wasn't exactly sporting for him to persecute a man solely on the basis of his physical size, the Baron ordered Yehim's legs amputated at the knees. In that way, the soon-to-be-shortened entertainment monitor would fit the Procrustean bill nicely. As the howling, pleading man was hauled away to the Harkonnen surgeons, the Baron summoned his nephew Glossu Rabban and the mentat Peter de Vries to attend him for a vital discussion, to be held in the Baron's workroom. Waiting for them at a work table spread with papers and Redulian crystal reports, the Baron boomed in his basso voice,
Damn the Atreides, from the boy duke to his bastard ancestors. I wish they'd all died in the Battle of Corin.
He whirled when De Vries entered the workroom doorway, and the Baron nearly lost his balance with suddenly clumsy muscle control. He grasped the edge of the table to steady himself.
How could Leto survive that trial? He had no proof, no defense.
Muted glow globes floated overhead in the room.
He still doesn't have a clue what really happened.
The Baron's bellow echoed through the enclosure and out an open door into the halls, which were lined with polished stone and brasswork. Rabban hurried down the corridor.
And damn Shaddam for his meddling. Just because he's emperor, what gives him the right to take sides? What's in it for him?
Both Rabban and De Vries hesitated at the iron-arched entrance to the workroom, not anxious to step into the maelstrom of the Baron's wrath. The Mentat closed his eyes and rubbed his thick eyebrows, trying to think of what to say or do. Rabban went to an alcove and poured himself a strong glass of Kirana brandy. He made slurping animal noises as he drank. The Baron stepped away from the table and paced the floor, his movements oddly jerky, as if he were having difficulty controlling his equilibrium. His clothes seemed tight on him from his recent weight gains.
It was supposed to start a sudden war, and after the carnage, who could pick up the pieces? But somehow the damned Atreides kept everyone from killing each other by insisting on a risky trial by forfeiture. Ancient rights be damned. And his willingness to sacrifice himself just to protect his precious friends and crew. Leto Atreides has gained favorable attention in the Landsraad. His popularity is soaring.
Peter De Vries cleared his throat. Perhaps, my Baron, it was a mistake to pit them against the Tleilaxu. Nobody cares about the Tleilaxu. It was difficult to foster a general sense of outrage among the houses. We never planned for this matter to come to trial.
We made no mistakes, Rabban grunted, immediately defending his uncle. Do you value your life, Peter?
De Vries didn't respond, nor did he show any fear. He was a formidable fighter in his own right, with tricks and experience that could undoubtedly defeat Rabban's brawn, should it come to physical combat. The Baron looked at his nephew, disappointed.
You never seem to grasp anything buried beneath even a single layer of subtlety.
Rabban glared at the Mentat.
Duke Leto is just an impetuous young ruler from an unremarkable family. House Atreides makes its income through selling pundi rice?
He spat the words. The fact is, Rabban, the twisted Mentat said smoothly, with the voice of a snake, that the other members of the Landsraad Council actually seem to like him. They admire what this boy duke has accomplished. We've made him a hero.
Rabban finished his drink, poured another, slurped it. The Landsraad Council becoming altruistic?
The Baron snorted.
That's even more unbelievable than Leto winning his case.
From the surgery rooms down the long, dim halls, grisly noises could be heard, screams of agony that echoed along the corridors all the way to the Baron's workroom. The muted glow globes flickered, but maintained their low level of illumination. The Baron looked piercingly at De Vries, then gestured toward the operating rooms.
Perhaps you'd better attend to this yourself, Peter. I want to make certain that idiot entertainment monitor survives his surgery, at least until I've made sufficient use of him.
Yes, my Baron, the Mentat said, and scuttled down the halls to the medical chambers. The screams grew higher pitched and womanish. The Baron heard the sounds of sizzling cutter rays and a grinding saw. The Baron thought of his newly shortened plaything and what he would do to Yehim as soon as the painkillers began to wear off. Or could it be possible the doctors had managed their task without using any painkillers? Perhaps. Rabban let his thick-lidded eyes fall closed in supreme pleasure, just listening and enjoying. Given the choice, he would rather have hunted the man down in Gedi Prime's wilderness preserve. But the Baron thought that sounded like too much trouble, all that running and chasing and climbing snow-covered rocks. He could come up with far better ways of spending his time. Besides, the Baron's limbs and joints had been growing increasingly sore of late. His muscles were weakened and trembled. His body was losing its edge. For now, the Baron would simply make up his own sport. Once Yehim's stumps were cauterized and sealed, he would pretend the hapless monitor was Duke Atreides himself. That would be fun. The Baron paused and realized how foolish it was for him to be so upset over the failure of a single plan. For uncounted generations, the Harkonnens had spun subtle traps for their hated mortal enemies. But the Atreides were difficult to kill, especially when their backs were to the wall. The feud extended all the way back to the Great Revolt, the betrayal, the accusations of cowardice. Since that time, Harkonnen had always hated Atreides, and vice versa. And so it would always be. "We still have Arrakis," the Baron said. "We still control Melange production, even though we're under Choam's thumb and the watchful eye of the Padishah Emperor." He grinned at Rabban, who grinned back at him, strictly out of habit. Deep in the heart of the dirty and dark grandeur of Harkonnen Keep, the Baron clenched his fist and raised it high in the air. "As long as we control Arrakis, we control our own fortunes." He clapped a hand on his nephew's padded shoulder. "We will wring spice from the sands until Arrakis is nothing more than an empty husk." The universe contains untapped and heretofore unimagined energy sources. They are before your very eyes, yet you cannot see them. They are in your mind, yet you cannot think them. But I can. T.O. Holtzman, Collected Lectures. On the Spacing Guild world of Junction, the one who had been Demir Pilru was brought before a tribunal of navigators. They didn't tell him the reason, and even with all his intuition and conceptual understanding of the universe, he could not fathom what they wanted from him. No other trainees joined Demir, none of the new pilots who had learned the ways of fold space with him. On a huge open parade ground of stunted black grass, the sealed spice-filled tanks of the high-level tribunal were arrayed in a semicircle on grooved flagstones, where tracks from thousands of previous convocations could still be seen. Demir's smaller tank sat in front of them all, solitary at the center of the semicircle. Relatively new to his life as a navigator, still a low-ranking pilot, he retained much of his human shape inside the enclosed tank. The members of the tribunal, steersmen all, each inside his own tank, showed only bloated heads and monstrously altered eyes peering out through the murk of cinnamon orange. "I will be like them someday," Demir thought. At one time, he would have recoiled in horror. Now he accepted it as inevitable. He thought of all the new revelations he would have along the way. The Guild Tribunal spoke to him in their shorthand, higher-order mathematical language, thoughts and words communicated through the fabric of space itself, vastly more efficient than any human conversation. Grodin, the head instructor, acted as their mouthpiece. "You have been monitored," said Grodin. By long-standing procedure, Guild instructors set up holo-recording devices in every highliner navigation chamber and every training tank of the new and unproven pilots. Periodically, in the ship's circuitous routes between the stars, these recordings were removed from the transports and cargo ships and delivered to Junction. "All evidence is studied in detail as a routine matter." Demir knew that Guild bank officials and their economic partners in Choam had to make certain that important navigation rules and safeguards were being followed. He questioned none of it.
The Guild is perplexed by targeted and unauthorized transmissions being directed to your navigation chamber.
His brother's communication device.
Demur reeled inside his tank, floating free, seeing all the dizzy possibilities, the punishments and retributions he might face. He could become one of those pathetic failed navigators, stunted and inhuman. The physical price paid, but the benefits not reaped. But Demur knew his ability was strong. Perhaps the steersman would forgive.
"We are curious," Grodin said.
Demur told them everything, explained everything he knew, gave them every detail. Trying to remember what Kater had told him, he reported on the conditions inside Sealed Ix, the Tleilaxu decision to return to more primitive Highliner designs. The Highliner decision disturbed them, but the tribunal was more interested in the functioning of the Rogo transceiver itself.
"Never have we had instantaneous fold-space transmission," Grodin said. For centuries, all messages had been carried by couriers, in physical form, on a physical ship that traveled through fold-space much faster than any known method of transmission could skim across space.
"Can we exploit this innovation?"
Demur realized the military and economic potential of such a device, if it could ever prove feasible. Though he didn't know all the technical details, his brother had created an unprecedented system, and one most intriguing to the Spacing Guild. They wanted it for themselves. A senior tribunal member suggested the possibility of using a mentally enhanced navigator on both ends, rather than a mere human, like Kater Pilru. Another questioned whether the link was more mental than technological, an enhanced connection because of the former closeness of the twins, the similarity of their brain patterns. Perhaps, among the vast pool of pilots, navigators, and steersmen, the Guild could find others with similar mental connections, though it would likely be rare. Nevertheless, despite the cost and difficulty, this method of communication was perhaps a service that could be tested, and then offered at great expense to the Emperor.
"You may retain your status as pilot," Grodin said, releasing him from the inquiry.
For several weeks after returning in triumph from Kaitain, Duke Leto Atreides and Romber Vernius had awaited a response from the new Emperor to their request for an Imperial audience. Leto was prepared to board a shuttle and travel to the Imperial Palace the moment a courier arrived with a confirmed slot in the Emperor's calendar. He had vowed to make no mention of his bluff message, decided not to pursue the matter of a Corino-Tleilaxu connection. But Shaddam IV had to be curious. If another week passed without a response, however, Leto would go there even without an appointment. Attempting to ride the momentum of his increasing stature and popularity, Leto wished to discuss amnesty and reparations for House Vernius. He believed this would be the best chance to bring the situation to a fortuitous conclusion. But as the days passed in imperial silence, he saw the opportunity slipping like silt through his fingertips. Even optimistic Romber became agitated and frustrated, while Kylea grew more and more resigned to their limited options in life. Finally, in a standard communique via human courier bearing a message cylinder, the Emperor suggested, since he had very little free time for conversation with his cousin, that they make use of a new and untried method being offered by the Spacing Guild, an instantaneous process called Guild Link. It involved the mental connection of two Guild navigators positioned in separate star systems. A Highliner in orbit around Caladan and another over Kaitain could theoretically arrange a conversation involving Duke Leto Atreides and Emperor Shaddam IV.
"At last I'll be able to speak my piece," Leto said, though he had never before heard of this communication method.
Shaddam seemed anxious to try it for his own purposes, and this way no one would see him actually meeting with Duke Leto Atreides. Kylea's emerald eyes lit up, and she even ignored the distasteful bull's head that hung in the dining hall. She went to change her dress into proud Vernius colors, though it wasn't likely she would be seen in the transmission at all. Romber came at the appointed hour, accompanied by Thufir Hawat. Leto sent all the other retainers, guards, and household staff out of the room. The highliner that had brought the original courier remained in geostationary orbit over Caladan. Another already waited over Kytane. The sophisticated guild steersmen aboard each ship, separated from one another by vast distances, would use an unfathomable procedure that allowed them to stretch their minds across the void, joining thoughts to form a connection. The guild had tested hundreds of their navigators before finding two that could establish a tentative direct link. Through telepathy, Melange fostered prescience, or some other method, to be determined. Leto took a deep breath, wishing he had more time to practice his words, though he had already waited far too long. He dared not request another delay. From a magnificent hedge-lined arboretum at the Imperial Palace, Shaddam spoke into a tiny microphone on his chin, which transmitted to speakers in the navigation chamber of the Highliner over his planet. "Can you hear me, Leto Atreides? It's a sunny morning here, and I've just returned from my morning walk." He took a sip from a goblet of syrupy juice. As the Emperor's words reached the navigation chamber of the ship orbiting Kytane, the steersman in the other Highliner over Caladan experienced them in his mind, in an echo of what his compatriot had heard. Breaking the link temporarily, the steersman over Caladan repeated the Emperor's words into the glittering speaker globe that floated within his spice-filled chamber. In turn, standing in the echoing dining hall of Castle Caladan, Leto heard the words over his own speaker system, distorted and slow, without the nuances of emotion. But still, they were the Emperor's own words. "I've always preferred the morning sun of Caladan, cousin," Leto responded, using the familiar form of address, trying to begin on friendly terms. "You should visit our humble world someday." By the time Leto said this, the navigator above Caladan was again in guild link with his associate, and Leto's words were heard in the other ship, then transmitted down to Kytane. "This new communication is marvelous," Shaddam said, avoiding the meat of Leto's request. He did, however, seem to be enjoying the possibilities of guild link, as if it were a new toy for him. "Much faster than human messengers, though it'll likely be prohibitively expensive. Ah, yes, we have here the makings of another monopoly for the guild. Hopefully they won't charge too much for urgent messages." Receiving the words in his dining hall, Leto wondered if that message was for his benefit or the guild eavesdroppers. Shaddam coughed uneasily, sounds that were not repeated in the translation process.